Stuff Is Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast. My name is Ben Ballas. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. Today we've got our two co-hosts, Jackson and Joe, reacting to and breaking down the Celtics' epic 32-point comeback against aging rock star Greg Popovich and the Spurs. I wasn't able to join them for this one, but they very quickly and very excitedly assembled to get this podcast into your ears. And with that, let's get to it.
All right. So there's a special type of game, bro. It's the tingly game. It's like after the game where your actual blood's been pumping, that you feel, you sit down, you can feel your legs, they feel like tingly. Is that something that you've had?
Tingly, yeah, for sure.
Like the real pace, tight ones.
Yeah, say, yeah, the pacing around the lounge room as well too. That's a mark of a tight one, man. Full disclosure, I've been like throwing up all morning. Overshare for everybody, but I've been like dead sick. And I remember that as the lead continued to grow in the first half, it was like the disgust of the performance was outweighing the actual nausea that I was experiencing. And I started to feel a bit better, like just more of, oh yeah, you know, just accept it and whatever. Then the comeback starts. And then I just feel this like illness just building up again. And I was like, I don't know if this is good or this is bad. But I mean, yeah, whatever that game, like games like that can do to your body. Like there's the full gamut of physical reactions I've had this morning, this afternoon. And yeah, I'm just blown away. I feel vindicated as a Celtics fan because I've only been following this team like 8-9 years or thereabouts. But like all I've had to really hang my hat on historically wise is like Isaiah, a few of his performances, you know, right. now we have seen live the equal highest scoring game from a Celtic ever. And that is just, it's amazing. I'm still getting my head around it.
So Jackson, you feel like you're starting to earn your stripes.
I do. A little bit, do you? I do. Yeah. I can now like hold, like, and go into a conversation with Celtics fans. Like, where were you when Tatum scored bloody 60 in a 32-point comeback against the Spurs? And I have a story about it. So it's fantastic.
Jackson's like, I was hugging the porcelain god and picking up my offering.
whatever I was saying to that toilet. Yeah. It heard me and it answered in an amazing way. Where do you even begin to analyze that? Is it worth analyzing or is it worth just gushing about how amazing this is just in the grand scheme of just fandom, really?
I think this is a look, we can get to some specifics because, you know, but well, everyone will want to like ruminate a little on the specifics, but for me, this is a meta game. All right, this is a meta, yep. a meta fandom type game, right? So I've been thinking a lot about the difference between hopes and expectations. Mm. It's like a rant I've had on the podcast before. And I think this game is a worthwhile reminder about this doesn't really change my expectations for the team going forward, right?
Sure.
But this is a reason why you should never give up hope, right? And that's how you know, it's talking about earning your stripes. You earn your stripes as a fan by like holding on to hope, mm-hmm. despite low expectations. And there is no reason to expect to come back from a 32-point lead. Like I regard a safe lead in the NBA as once it cracks 25, it's very rare for it to come back. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this team, right? Like I said, my expectations aren't really changed. But guess what? The team is what it is. We're not making any trades between now and the end of the season. We're going to make the playoffs in some capacity. Mm. So just get your hopes out, you know, and hold on to them.
Absolutely. And we saw a similar, you know, burst of scoring from Tatum last year too, and we've been kind of waiting for that moment to happen. Is it happening now? Because, I mean, what, he had a career high 53, what, 3 weeks ago. Now he's got 60. The way he's going, you wouldn't put it beyond him to match that or get near that again too. So even if the expectations don't change for where you think this team's going, because I think like you can give Tatum like 60 every single night. I don't think we're beating the Nets or the Sixers in a 7-game series. That's a horrible reality that we'll have to face. But when you see performances like that in games that you win that you have no right of winning, You're right. It does inspire that hope, and there were so many moments where I wanted to turn that game off, but I was like, I've got nothing better to do. I'm sitting here, just, you know, the alternative is just go and, you know, regurgitate again in the toilet. So I'll cop this because it's slightly less nauseating. But yeah, you're right. Like, it just inspires so much hope that, like, A, not any game can be lost if Tatum, or, you know, anyone for that matter, but Tatum really can go off. And, you know, if he's got that in his locker and he can, you know, produce that down the stretch and in the playoffs, then, you know, who knows? You can be that team that comes from nowhere that does it. The Heat did that last year too. So my expectations probably haven't shifted either, but yeah, the hope that it gives you and the inspiration that it gives you and the buzz that it gives you, like, oh, it's just, it's flowing through me. It's flowing through my veins.
I think you're doing a really reasonable thing here, and you're saying, hey, okay, look, this is like, we've seen Tatum do some amazing stuff. Some amazing stuff could happen again. Will it be enough to be the Celtics or the Nets? Gee, I don't know. For me, I'm like, this is proof that a game is actually an end unto itself, right? Yeah, okay. Like, it's not just a means on the, like, it's a self-contained story. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And just because it's, you know, part of a collection of short stories that we call an NBA season, right, it doesn't change the fact that just this game in itself is just awesome in its own right. It doesn't have to contribute. It doesn't have to be part of a championship season, right? This is why we do it. This is awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And to be honest, it completely, like, it's not that it outweighs other disappointing games. It's that they're in the past, and this is a really beautiful present, right?
Yeah.
And that's in enough of itself, right? That's a gift in and of itself, and it's enough for me as a fan.
Yeah.
You know?
It is, yeah. And I was just thinking about, like, the games that we've had this season. Like, there have been some anemically bad losses and just moments where we've just utter despair. But, I mean,
But do they matter to you right now?
Like, no, they don't. They may as well not even happened.
You know what I mean? They may as well not even happened.
You're right. And I think back, it's like, you know, I thought I'd be watching that Golden State Warriors game the other week for a while, because that was pretty much one for the ages. Hell, even the Timberwolves game where he got his first career high, he got the 53. I was thinking, even though this season has been garbage, these one individual games, you know, you can go back to and you can say, this was a great time to be a Celtics fan. This was a fantastic experience. And it just got, like, topped again. So even if this, the rest of the season now just nosedives, like, you know, full disclosure, I'm quite certain we'll probably lose to, like, the who we play next? Portland. By like 11 or some shit. You know, that's just, that could just happen. It could just be one of those stinking games where it happens. But yeah, like, just this game in and of itself, yeah, I am going to interpret it as a gift, and I am going to accept it as a gift. So, and I think anyone who has been down on the Celtics quite reasonably over the last, you know, season has to take this game just as a one-off, as one of those historical performances, one of those all-time, just, this is just incredible to bear witness to. So yeah, I'm completely with you there, Joe. Getting into more specifically the game, I am doing my best Ben Vallis impression here, because we're rudderless. We've just got to go. So you please jump in.
Ben Vallis, Greek god.
Greek god. I love those emails, by the way.
That was great. It's good. We can't tell you about those emails.
But certainly not. The game itself, it's probably worth mentioning. I mean, oh God, do we want to talk about other performances here, or do we want to continue gushing over Tatum, or just what the game was about?
No, man, like, you take it. I have, you know, I have a few bouquets to hand out.
For sure. I guess, you know, let's specifically talk about Tatum, you know, just in a vacuum of itself. Do you feel like Tatum is becoming more of the player that you expect him to be? Or do you think a performance like this actually sort of puts him a little bit higher than what you were hoping he could be?
Because
we're in that headspace where you can get this level of excitement, right?
I'm in a funny place on Tatum.
Okay.
Okay, so, like, it almost sounds ungrateful in the wake of a 60-point game and a 32 you know, and a 32-point comeback. For me, what I saw of Tatum tonight was more, it's not like a skill thing. I was very pleased that he was clearly making an effort to get into the paint. His, in my view, his worst habit is his reliance on the sidestep three when we don't need it. There's circumstances where I do like it. Like, I would have been fine with it at the end of regulation.
Yeah, because that's funny, because I wouldn't have been, but sorry, go on.
Well, my reason for being fine, it's circumstantial, right? Because, like, at the end of the game, the worst thing that can happen is you take a shot and you leave enough time on the clock for the other team to come in. Like, that is the worst thing that can happen. I guess, well, actually, that's probably the second worst thing that could happen. The worst thing that could happen is you could turn it over.
Turn over, or offensive
and,
foul,
and
yeah.
It's going the other way, you know? Like, live ball turnover is probably the worst thing there. So, but all that to say, for me, I just need to see Tatum putting pressure on the hoop, right? He needs to put pressure on, and he made a concerted effort to do it. So, yay, Tatum, that's great. Now, one thing with Tatum, I'm going to keep harping on this. The dude needs to learn how to finish with his left hand.
Yes.
He really needs to do it. He flubbed it awfully. He actually attempted it, so I guess I should be happy about that. But if you notice, he often tries to finish with that right hand, going to the reverse, and it just stuffs up his timing. But anyway, so where am I at on Tatum? I'm like, he's somewhere in between, like, my expectations for him in the future. I'm not quite ready to expect him to be a top-tier NBA player.
Okay.
So this tonight was a top-tier performance of shot-making, but I'm not there yet for him with my expectations.
Gotcha.
Where are you, though, man?
I
just took a big piss in your Weet-Bix, you know?
not at all. I guess, fairly or unfairly, I think any NBA player, if you are going to put them in that elite status, you have to have the playoff aspect there as well, too. Now, Tatum has not been bad in the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination, but, it's all well and good. You know, Harden's a good example. You know, that could very well could change this season. But, like, Harden can have stretches where he is just, like beyond comprehension, 50, 60, 45, et cetera, all throughout the regular season. You get to the playoffs, and if there is any game where it's, like, it's not what you expect or it's less of that, then all of a sudden, oh, he chokes. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have this. It's not what you think. So there's, like, the divide between the regular season performances and the playoff performances. So for me to, like, fully, you know, I'm putting aside all of this, you know, these tingles that we've experienced over the last few hours to the side and thinking in a vacuum. Like,
we've got analyst brain and fan brain, right?
The duality is perfect. I think if we were to see this kind of individual just tear in a playoff perspective or in, you know, games where, you know, there's really on the line. I know there's a lot on the line now, but I mean, there's still 9 games after this. You know, a loss tonight is not, you know, curtains by any stretch, but in a game where the pressure is really there and we see that happening, that's when I would probably elevate him to the next tier of, like, okay, this guy is not going to be, you know, at absolute best a poor man's Kevin Durant. At best, this guy could be, you know, him, his own player, you know, he could break free of that. Oh, he's going to be like this. He's going to be like that. So I'm with you in that he's not there yet, but I mean, 60 points, highest score from a Celtic ever, tied with Larry Bird at the age of, he is 23, right?
It's a lot of points.
That's pretty encouraging. That's pretty encouraging. And a 53 point game 3 weeks ago, a 60 point game today, it's a crucial part of the season. Is just you can't help, well, I can't help but just think that he's almost gone up a tier in my mind, but I do need to see it in the playoffs.
I'm not so concerned about seeing it in the playoffs. I'm more concerned with I want to see consistent impact on winning during the regular season.
Okay.
That's you know, like, it's not all 30 points are the same, you know, like, especially like with the scoring averages being a little inflated right now. Tatum's 25 a night is not the same as Durant's 25 a night. You know, like, it's just kind of not. It's hard to explain it, but there's just this inevitability to the great scorers.
Yeah.
That's not quite in Tatum's, like, that's not quite part of the Tatum vibe yet. There's not this inevitability to me to Tatum. Like, when you're playing a game against those elite players, you're just like, if you're within, you might have a 10-point lead at halftime, and you're like, it's not enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you know that's a top-tier player. you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, like, semi-related to that, you know, we're familiar with, like, you know, oh, he had a quiet 30, or he had, like, you didn't even realize he had 30 or 25 or thereabouts. He's had a lot of those games lately where you think he's just below average, and you check the box score at the end, and it's, like, 35, 7, and 5, and, you know, and you think, oh, okay, well, I didn't even really notice that. And I suppose he's been symptomatic of having, like, a lot of slow starts this season. When he hit his first contested, I think, baseline shot to start, I was like, oh, okay, this is probably going to be a good Tatum game, because, you know, typically he misses that and he goes for nothing until the midway through the second quarter. If he didn't do that, this would have been you know, a 40 point loss perhaps. So him just keeping us in there, and, you know,
just keeping
being
us inside that magic 32 point margin that you need to keep touch
close enough that when Grant Williams hits back to back 3-pointers, no one bats an eyelid, because it's just you think it's just for nothing anyway. So I would really like to see how the next few games go. It's very important, you know, next couple of weeks. I think we've got back to backs against the Heat. We've got a few East Conference games as well too. So if he can continue this, even if it's not, you know, the 60 or this, like, historical kind of performance, if it can be, you know, similar levels of production, then, you know, I think we're in a pretty good place for the down stretch. But again, you're right, consistency, particularly over the last 9 games, is going to be key.
Yeah, the I mean, it's just put up or shut up time, you know, like, and I for tonight, hey, the guy put up.
Absolutely.
You know, he did put up like 60 points is just, that's just top tier, yeah, that no just, matter how you slice it.
Yeah, I as soon as it was over, I switched over to the Suns Utah game, and the first thing that came out of the commentator's mouth as I switched it over was, Jason Tatum, 60 points tonight, and the Suns color commentator was like, yeah, Devin Booker had 70.
Like, it wasn't a real 70 though.
Yeah,
like,
and they lost.
That's exactly it though, you know, like that was garbage, you know. That's not to say that Devin Booker's not a real player, but
of course,
like,
not.
But, like, Devin Booker's not good enough to drive winning on that level.
Yeah.
You know, we're not thinking about Devin Booker being one of the all-time greats.
No.
You know?
No,
he's good.
Not.
He's really good, but he's not at that level. So, you know, when it comes time to place Jason Tatum, when I'm calmed down and the blood isn't pumping so much, I don't know where to place him.
Yeah.
Just don't know where to place him in the NBA hierarchy, you know, when he's at his peak.
Well, hopefully the next couple months he very clearly announces himself in that upper tier too. So we shall see. I guess we should probably discuss some other guys, and the first thing that comes to mind, you probably is on your mind too, Aaron Naismith.
Oh, yes.
Man, that guy just almost seemingly out of nowhere is become such a contributor. I know he had, like, a good game last game, and he had another good game this today. And, you know, I'm guilty of just maybe not noticing the little things that he does. I don't know, like, what you've been noticing of his game or anything like that, but these last couple games, just some of the plays he came up with tonight, some of the hustle plays, some of those rebound putbacks, and, you know, he was playing with 5 fouls, I think, like, midway through the fourth quarter, and he played, like, don't quote me on this, again, I don't notice the little things, but I'm pretty sure he was in there.
We're recording this, bro. Like,
yeah, pretty sure he was in there for a lot of the fourth, and for quite a bit of overtime, too, and he didn't foul out, and he stayed in there and he contributed. So Aaron Naismith, man, let's hype him up, shall we?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I think so. One of the things I've been railing against is basically lazy threes. Like, I just don't like us taking threes when we can get that shot any other time.
Mm.
I don't like guys taking generally. I like decisive threes, but I don't like quick threes when we don't need him.
Sure.
My exception to that rule is Naismith. Like, to me, that dude is in there to be a flamethrower. And if he catches it and he's halfway open, I want him to shoot it straight away. So that's the first thing I'm noticing about him is that trigger is getting pretty quick. And as he does it, it opens the rest of his game up. They've got a play where they run him off a double screen. Run him off a double screen to the top of the key to get a shot. It's sort of a pet play that they run for him, and he hit one tonight and as part of the comeback. And then the next time they ran the play for him, up fake, one dribble to the hoop. You know, that'll open up his game. I just like seeing decisive. I like decisiveness in players, and he certainly seems to me to have, when you feel like you're not going to get yanked straight away. I don't know, Jackson, you know, you feel like you relax and you can just play more, play freely and just and not get nervous about making the wrong decision.
Yeah, I feel Pritchard has that. You know, I don't feel he worries about, you know, whether this is a good shot or a bad shot. If he's confident in his shot, he's going to take it. Definitely seen more of that from him, Naismith. This is the last couple games. So if that is where he's at mentally, like, I'm just going to go out, I'm going to shoot this confidently, I'm in here for a reason, you know, the hesitation is just, you know, is waning, or there's no hesitation at all. That's, you know, even if he's not going to give you the 16 points or the 15 points every night, even if he scores nothing, like, just being out there and, you know, doing his role confidently, it helps the team immensely.
Yeah. So, and offensively, he seems to be suited to be able to do what we want Ojale to do, just because he's that level of
good
shooter.
Good point.
You know, like, there's a really good, little spoiler alert, but we had a pod with Steve Bulpett earlier today, and he made the point that everyone can kind of relate to if you played b-ball at any level. It's how hard it is to be Ojale. Like, you go up and down the floor playing defense, hardly touching it, but when you touch it, you got to shoot it and you got to make it, or else you're getting yanked.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, if you've ever played on a team where you're kind of probably a level, it's probably a level above where you should be playing, you know what that feels like. Hey, it's just, it's kind of awful.
Yeah.
You know? But Naismith, he is a shooter on that level, and he's probably, we can probably more expect a lot more consistency from him in that role offensively than anybody else.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, given that, I mean, obviously, just pivoting slightly here, we all know that Evan Fournier recovering from, you know, COVID just definitely does not look himself. And I know you guys touched on that with Bulpett earlier as well, too. But
we did.
It's good to have someone who is able to fill that role. Because when Fournier came and he started hitting shots, we thought, oh, sweet. I mean, I fell into the trap of thinking, oh, sweet, that problem's solved now. You know, that's just going to be the guy who is going to, you know, be the flamethrower, is going to have that reliable shooting. It might be a little bit too eager to say, to anoint Naismith as that guy who's going to be able to provide that to us. But based on the evidence of what we've seen, and based on, you know, the contributions he's making, and that he doesn't look nervous, to step up at a time when we need it is really valuable. It's so encouraging to see.
It's huge.
Absolutely.
It's huge, you know. Like we really need someone in that role. We really need someone who can just shoot.
Yeah.
we really haven't made it. And often, the issue that you get with those guys, your McDermotts, your Reddicks, your Corvers, or what have you, is they can't impact the game defensively. But Naismith has a path to being a positive impact defensive player, like a genuine 3-and-D guy.
Yeah.
I guess I do find myself watching him quite a lot defensively, and I haven't seen any bad rotations lately. They were using him to – sorry, often I think when he would be checking – I want to say he was checking DeRozan, and often they were trapping DeRozan. Like, the second guy was coming over to trap DeRozan, and he was recovering. Like, I saw on one occasion they were trapping DeRozan on one corner, and that resulted in a swing, and he – absolutely hissed it over to the other side to contest a shot on the other wing. High effort. He seems to me okay. He can certainly shift his feet well enough that he's not going to get picked on. So, you know, there's a path to him contributing. I mean, if you can knock down shots, it sucks, but, like, that's your kind of... It's like playing defense gives you the right to take shots, but making shots gives you the right to keep playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I suppose in a brief sort of, you know, comparison, someone like Romeo Langford, I know they're the same kind of person, but I'm guilty of seeing Romeo Langford brick shots and I just think immediately, like, what's he doing out there? You know, even though he does contribute defensively, but rightly or wrongly, those shots don't go in, or you have your moment to have a shot and doesn't go in, then you just think, you know, what are you doing out there? And it can be unfair, you know, on players like that. But, you know, if your game is shooting and you shoot well, or you at least, you know, shoot with confidence, or you play with confidence, then, yeah. Naismith was great tonight. Naismith was great. Who else should we go? This is what happens when we don't have a producer to guide us. I'm just blindly looking at the box score here, looking for talking points. Anything that we haven't touched upon that you would like to mention here, Joe?
I think some big picture stuff that co-host Larbird has been writing about. Larbird's a real optimist for this team. He's definitely more optimistic than I am. Definitely.
He talks me out of bad moods with his takes too, and I really appreciate that, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes I think, oh, you poor, sweet, naive man, Larbird. But but tonight was vindication for him, you know? He did want us to mention a couple of faithless fans. User Scrotum McSeaman, which I feel like that's alarmingly close to my username.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be... Is that your burner account for a second?
No.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. Look, I think we could probably, you know, talk about this forever, but, you know, it's important to be optimistic. It's important not to, you know, like we said, coming to full 60, 360 here a little bit, you know, keep the faith, you know, don't necessarily, you know, alter your expectations, but, you know, have some hope. And it is very hard to maintain hope when you are, you know, having the first half or the first quarter like you had. And, you know, I'm guilty of it too, being like, oh my God, I don't think I should watch this anymore. But, you know, if you do stick in there and you do, you know, you don't jump to conclusions, as hard as it can be, you know, in the heat of the moment with sport, you know, you can see things a little bit clearly. And maybe Larbird errs on the side of optimism a little bit more than maybe what would be realistic. Maybe he might be proven right. And this team could, you know, explode in the last, you know, few games and make a solid playoff run. I certainly hope so. And I hope Larry can, you know,
I'm just going through the takes from these guys, and to be honest, like, I probably thought the same things as they did.
So
I'm not flaming you guys, but you know, this is just what happens, and Larry's our mate, so I'm going to go into bat for him here. One comment from Scrotum McSeaman: the copes after this game will be glorious. Yeah, I definitely thought that.
Oh my God. Well, some
disrespectful air quotes. This is a 55 win team. That's a direct shot at Larry.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Yeah, the influx of memes that have invaded the Celtics subreddit of you know, I they're not necessarily high quality or anything like that, but like when it's all doom and gloom, you know, it can put a smile on your face. But like, I'd much rather now see the overreactive, positive, happy, you know, low quality memes than what we had prior. So, man, look,
Man, McSeaman, if you're out there, just, I know you're enjoying it. Come on, deep down, you're enjoying the fact that we came back. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's okay. You can be upset with yourself for having such a take and be excited about a win. These are not mutually exclusive. This is just this is the duality of man. This is the duality of a Celtics fan, particularly this season. Joe, I'm basically out of waffling now. Do you have anything else to say before we call it off?
No, man. Drink it in.
Indeed.
All we have is tonight, you know. So and you know, they're going to suck again at some point in the season. But guess what? Doesn't matter.
It's brilliant.
We're still fans nonetheless.
Last thing I will say, I don't think we touched on it with our Tatum appraisal, but zero turnovers. 60 points, zero turnovers.
Pretty good. I did have one other thing I want to talk about. This is a Larbird comment in the chat thread. He says, JB playing like he's drunk. And I was like, yeah, JB does go into drunk mode sometimes, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. We call him One Down Brown for like very good reason, and he missed two free throws in like the first 5 minutes, and I was just like, this is going to be bad. And he had a couple of those turnovers where he's like, you know, he's trying to get past his man in the post, and he just ends up like just falling over and throwing the ball away, and it's like, yeah, it definitely wasn't a good game, but huge clutch three.
Huge shot.
Right.
He just kept, like, even though he was not playing well, he kept trying to put pressure on the hoop. Like, he kept trying to push the ball. And there's something sort of that does something for the spirit of your team when guys are just going that hard, you know?
Definitely. Probably last thing I will say too, no Kemba Walker tonight. I've gotten very accustomed to seeing us, you know, very, very spineless and very directionless without Kemba Walker. Certainly accurate for the first 24 and a bit minutes of this game, but
sure,
to come through and get through that without your starting point guard, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Joe,
hey.
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, man.
Gotta say. All right, cool. Well, we might leave it at that. Thank you very much for listening to us waffle on about the Celtics. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll be back later. Joe.
No, that's not how we finish. That's not how we finish.
Beg your pardon. Please finish for us properly, mate.
Well, that'll about do it. Bottoms up, Celtics fans. ding.
Oh my god.